The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
All right. Welcome to a Monday. Ugh, Mondays are always difficult, aren't they? Well, I hope you had a great weekend. It was a rough one. I apologize. First of all, I apologize because on Friday, I gave you what I thought was important information about that the three-part documentary called Unprecedented that was put together by this British documentarian named Alex Holder, who had allegedly unprecedented access to the former First Family. We watched it last night, and it was just, ew. It was just more of the same shit that we saw for the last 6 years or so. And what a waste of 3 hours that I'll never get back. So if you didn't watch it, if you didn't sign up for the Discovery Plus free trial so you could watch this thing, it's not necessary, really. There's nothing new. You didn't learn anything. You got to see how totally self-centered and narcissistic the evil spawn of the former guy are, but you knew that already, didn't you? Yeah. So anyway, I apologize for that. If you're looking for something good to binge, I'll tell you again, I watched this. There are three seasons of a show called The Split. And even though it's about couples and it's three sisters, three adult sisters, two of whom are family attorneys, as is their mother. And the third sister is just sort of a lost spirit. Anyway, it's more complex and more interesting. So just, I thought I'd pass that along. And again, I apologize if you wasted time watching this thing, because it was touted to be like this so unprecedented. Don't believe the marketing. Anyway, so before we move on, I'm so bad at asking for money. You know, this program is not behind any paywall. It is offered for free, but we are listener supported. So there are so many of you who've been donating, and sometimes you do a one-shot donation. There's a number of ways to do that on the website at NicoleSandler.com. There's a buy me a cup of coffee. And some people do. They'll buy multiple cups of coffee. And so that's one way to donate to the show. Or you could do a one-time or recurring donations either through PayPal or Stripe. I try to give you a lot of ways to give because I know a lot of people don't like using PayPal. I get it. Fully get it. So I'll be adding more like Venmo and Zelle and things like that, because there are other ways to send money electronically. And for those of you who are old school, sort of like I am, and think, well, thank you, Ken. Ken in the chat room just made a super chat donation, which is a way you can do that through YouTube. And I understand people who say, well, I've listened to the radio, old folks like me, listened to the radio my whole life, and, I never had to pay. I get it. And maybe you're in the position that you can't afford to pay for shows that you want to listen to. If you're in a position to be able to support the program and you don't, that's who I'm talking to. If you can't afford it, don't worry about it. And I will go above and beyond just doing a show for you every day. I will make art for you. I will custom make art for you. So there's a lot of ways to support the show. But the bottom line is, again, I suck at this. If I worked at a public radio station, for instance, say KPFK in Los Angeles, I would do regular pledge drives or free speech TV, as it were. I would do regular pledge drives and ask you to please reach into your pocketbook. I do have premiums. Here's the thing. If you ever hear an author on this program, and I talk to a lot of them, and you think that book sounds really interesting, ask me for a donation to the show. I will give you the book. I will even send you your own link to the interview about the book. You know, I'm creative. So that's my pitch for today. If you can support the program, please do, because I need it. This is my job. So anyway, that's that. I had a pretty relatively quiet weekend. I went out and showed my art yesterday, but I got to tell you, it is too damn hot. You know, here in Florida, it's always warm and the humidity will kill you. And it nearly did me yesterday. So I may not be doing too many more of those shows, at least until it gets a little cooler. Anyway, a lot of stuff going on. First of all, if you've heard what's news throughout the day today on the Progressive Voices Network, or perhaps you download it as a podcast every day, because I send out two podcasts each day on the one account. I send out the show in the afternoon and I send out the What's News report in the morning. Well, I had read in a number of places that there were going to be two January 6th hearings this week. One we know is tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern. So you West Coasters, sorry, you got to get up early, or just, you know, come back at 5 Eastern and I'll recap what went on for you, because we will do that tomorrow. So the second one was supposed to be Thursday night, another prime time hearing, and I guessed at 8 p.m. Eastern. Well, that has been kiboshed. That's not happening this week. There will be another one next week. So one this week, tomorrow, and then one next week, and well, I guess we'll see what happens after that. But that's the schedule, as they say, across the pond. There's a bunch of stuff going on. Our old friend Harvey J.K. is going to weigh in. If you saw the little show card I put up at the beginning, I used a quote, a line from a Sam Cooke song, What a Wonderful World. Don't know much about history. Thank you, Joe, in the chat room. Don't know much of biology. That song. Well, the thing is, too many in America don't know our history, and these right-wing crazies are trying to rewrite the history. So Harvey J.K. will join us in the second half of the show today. He is an historian. He was a professor for many years of democracy and justice. Talk about, you know, what do you teach? Democracy and justice. But he's a historian. So anyway, Harvey J.K. will join us for the second half of the show at the bottom of the hour, just to talk about what a weird course we are on through history and everything that's going on and how we can fix it. Harvey and I tend to have these philosophical discussions, so do join in with us, okay? But a lot of stuff happened this weekend and even this morning. Let's start with this morning, shall we? It was billed as a celebration at the White House. Yes, a celebration. What was the celebration, you ask? Well, Joe Biden was celebrating the passage of that gun legislation that they got through. They got it through the Senate somehow. Well, yeah, they got it through the Senate, but it was quite watered down, right? And it didn't really, I mean, it wouldn't have stopped any of the recent mass shootings that we've all been terrorized by, right? It's sad. So this morning at the White House, when the president had his celebration, a man stood up and, well, they say heckled him. I don't think heckled is the correct term, but a man who was in the audience, and it was outdoors, I don't know if it was the Rose Garden, or if it's still called the Rose Garden after, you know, what Melania did to it. I don't know. But the man is somebody who's been on this program before. In fact, Manuel Oliver lost his son Guac. His name was Joaquin, but they called him Guac. Guac Oliver was killed on Valentine's Day a few years ago. During his senior year at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. in Parkland, Florida. And so, yes, yeah, that is, you know, near where I live. And so I have had the chance to speak with Manuel Oliver before. So I want to play for you first. This is what happened at the Rose Garden, now, at the White House today. If you're listening to the audio, you're not watching any video, you're not going to hear Mr. Oliver because he was in the crowd. It wasn't mic'd, and it's a big area, and so it wasn't loud. So I'll try to explain to you what happened. But Biden's talking. He's at the microphone at the lectern, and somebody in the crowd stands up and says something. So here's, let's go to the videotape. And it went like this.
Today's many things is proof that despite the naysayers, we can make meaningful progress on dealing with gun violence.
Yeah.
Because make no
and you hear
mistake.
Somebody.
Sit down, you'll hear what I have to say.
Sit down, you'll hear what I have to say. And you can hear him vaguely, barely. I've been trying to tell you this for years. He said, you need to do more. You need to do more. And
let
now,
him talk. Let him talk.
Oh, so okay. Biden says let him talk,
make no
but he keeps talking.
This legislation is real progress, but more has to be done. The provision of this new legislation is going to save lives and is proof that today's politics, we can come together on a bipartisan basis to get important things done, even on an issue as tough as guns. And one more thing.
Okay, and so then Manuel Oliver was escorted off the White House grounds. And after Joe Biden said, let him speak, he kept talking. So he, you know, Manuel didn't have the chance to speak. But he is an artist, again, who lost his son to murder at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School at the hands of this twerp who's now in the penalty phase of his trial because he pleaded guilty. Anyway, Manuel Oliver has been doing a lot of activist work since his son was killed. And you know about Fred Gutenberg. So Fred Gutenberg lost his daughter, Jamie, in the same murderous rampage on a high school here in Parkland, Florida, that Manuel Oliver lost his son, Guac, in. They both have been very active and very vocal, but in different ways, right? So Manuel Oliver is an artist. He paints, but he's also done other kinds of art. So now I played this video, in fact, the day we had him on the show, but I want to remind you who he is and the kind of performance art that Manuel Oliver is doing, because it's just brilliant. It's just absolutely brilliant. When I caught wind of this the first time, I thought, this is like worthy of the Yes Men. This is the kind of work they did. So I'm just going to play for you a little video. It was a three-part video. The website, the organization that Manuel Oliver does this stuff under is called Change the Ref, changetheref.org, like referee. So let me just show you. They did an event. It was last year. It was just over a year ago. It was graduation time, you know, graduation season in June. And so they set up a rehearsal. So I'm going to play this video. There's going to be a lot of writing on the screen. I will read the text for those of you who are listening to an audio stream and not the video stream, so you don't miss anything. All right. So here is a piece of street theater by Manuel Oliver and Change the Ref. And it happened like this. So they're showing a big field of thousands of empty chairs. It says 3,044 members of the high school class of 2021 did not graduate. Because they were killed by a gun. They are the lost class.
The NRA does bear some responsibility.
Lost to a country that places guns over lives.
The choice to own a firearm is ours to make.
To take those guns away is an infringement on their rights.
Had to confront the gun lobby.
We had to confront
the gun lobby
in Las Vegas that you will not believe.
Let me begin by telling you what an honor it is to be here to help celebrate your graduation.
So on June 4th, 2021, we invited pro-gun advocate David Keene to speak.
Address to James Madison Academy. But that school does not exist.
Follow your dream and make it a reality.
It is a dramatic thing to watch a sitting NRA board member telling 3,000 empty chairs that they need to follow their hopes and dreams.
The shot from above of the thousands of empty chairs is really astounding.
The NRA once used advertising to transform American gun rights. It's just a bunch of clips about guns and about this event, a dark, affecting stunt. For the first time ever, a campaign turned a vocal firearm advocate into an anti-gun spokesperson.
Stand up and prevent them from succeeding.
And with one speech, inspired a historic demand for change. Over 1.4 billion impressions on this video. 66% increase in background check acceptance. It created a conversation around gun violence without needing another tragedy do it. Change the Ref. Again, there are three of those videos at changetheref.org. Actually, it's easier to find them on YouTube if you look there, because the Change the Ref website has so much stuff on it because they're very active, trying to do political theater, to change minds, to make people get invested, in this case, in gun control without another mass shooting, but by staging an event like this. It's creative. It's awesome. And Manuel Oliver, the fact that he was escorted off the White House grounds today, I think is a travesty. Just a travesty. It's disgusting. But that happened. That happened. You know, there's a lot of this stuff going on. And who knows when the next mass shooting will happen. But, you know, I recognize the pain of these parents. And now with each day, week, month that passes and another event like this, there are more people like Manuel Oliver and Fred Gutenberg and the other parents who've lost children that they'll never see again. And it changes a life. Changes a lot of lives. And even the people who don't get killed, but who get shot by one of these semi-automatic weapons of war that are designed to hollow out whatever they hit. You know, something's got to give. But I say that about a lot of things. Something's got to give. So, he didn't yell at Biden. He was in the crowd and he was speaking. He's like, this is not enough. You're celebrating. He took offense to the fact that it was billed as a celebration. And he said, what are you celebrating? That another shooting happened right after this bill passed? That this didn't prevent that, that we have to do a lot more? And then Biden said, no, let him speak. And then he didn't let him speak. Just saying. So anyway, I think that video, yes, exact. That video should be played over and over and over again. You know what? I should play you another one. Can I get to it from here? Let me see real quickly if I could find it. Because the one where the NRA executive... hold on. Let me see if I could bring it, if I can bring it up real fast, Change the Ref, because this one's really, I think that, yes, John Lott. So John Lott was an NRA executive, like a big, you know, obviously wasn't, whatever his name was, the mustachioed guy who I'm always trying to forget, Wayne LaPierre. Sorry, I thought I could forget his name, but I guess I couldn't. So it's not Wayne LaPierre-like, but anyway, this guy was a big NRA person. And sorry about Jackson. You can hear him barking because it's raining outside, and he doesn't like the thunder, unlike Jackson Brown. Okay, so let me just play this video for you because it's equally as good and important. Goes like this. So it's showing Vegas.
Dr. John Lott is an economist, educator, and scholar. He has authored several books, including More Guns, Less Crime, often referred to as the Bible of the National Rifle Association.
Mm-hmm. John Lott was invited to speak at this high school graduation.
Dr. John Lott.
Congratulations. You all have made a new stage in life. You know, your school is named after James Madison. and he proposed John Lott what makes became a living the speaking Second about Amendment guns. To the Constitution, that there's an individual right to people be able to keep guns for protection. Can you
he often speaks out against universal
world,
background
any
checks.
Any place in the world that's banned either all guns or all handguns and seen murder rates go down?
Yeah, every place.
I can't find a single place like that.
Every place. He once claimed that universal background checks would not have stopped a single mass shooting this century.
I was just working in the right. Department of Justice. Gun control advocates and Democrats will fight you tooth and nail. They want to go and say we've stopped 3.5 million dangerous people.
Okay, is anybody injured?
Yes, a lot of blood. Please help, please.
I look at it as we've stopped 3.5 million law-abiding citizens who wanted to get a gun.
Are you in the school? Where are you in the school?
Well, on the first floor. They were shooting into my classroom.
Anyway, congratulations on an amazing accomplishment. You know, I'm sure all of you will have a very bright future ahead. Thank you very much.
Except none of them had a future. Many of them could have been saved by a simple background check. And then they ask you to sign a petition for universal background checks at thelostclass.com. Thelostclass.com was the name of that campaign. Share those videos. That's why they're there. It may have happened a year ago, but the videos still work. And when I saw Manuel Oliver there today at the White House, and he did another thing where he went up on a construction crane to call attention, this man is doing street theater. Fred Gutenberg is using a different tactic. We need all of it. You need the inside strategy and the outside strategy, and good on Manuel Oliver. Somebody else I need to applaud is somebody who I did not know of before this weekend. But there is she's not only a member of the Pennsylvania House, but she, I believe, is the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House, if I have my facts straight. Her name is Joanna McClinton. And what you may not know, and I didn't realize it at the time, is that, you know, as many states are doing now in the wake of the extreme court overturning Roe v. Wade, is these state legislatures are now all about taking away women's rights to oversee the care of our bodies, because those men, you know, they think they know better than we do what we should be able to do. So in the very wee hours of the night or morning, I guess Friday, don't quote me on that, last week, the Pennsylvania legislature passed some of this, you know, this ridiculous dystopian abortion legislation. And Joanna McClinton had a few things to say about it. And just listen to this woman. She's brilliant.
We're talking about women dying. We're talking about more than half the population not being able to make decisions when not even half of this body has a uterus. But here we are, being silenced yet again. And understand, when you're silencing us, we are actually elected officials like you all. Mm. So you're silencing millions of voters from every corner of the Commonwealth when you silence us and don't allow us to amend bills that won't let people vote, that won't allow women to make their own decisions. You're silencing all of us.
You go, girl.
So we need to suspend the rules and let this amendment come through before we rush this off to the voters, those same voters that you tried to silence in 2020 when you didn't like the outcome of the election, those same voters that you said
Mr.
it didn't
Speaker.
Matter what they chose. Those are the people you're trying to shut up.
Yo. Oh, my goodness. How awesome was that? Again, her name is Joanna McClinton. We're going to hear more from her. And actually, there's a ton of video from her. And no, she's not usually that animated. But occasionally she yells and screams, hello, because sometimes it's the only way to get those feelings across. You know? I know. You know, there's another story that I just sort of related that made me go, yeah, hell yeah. So in Texas, A pregnant woman in Texas was driving to pick up her son from school, and she was worried that she was running late. So she got into the carpool lane, and she was pulled over by a Dallas County sheriff at a checkpoint at the exit from the freeway. And so her name was, I want to get her name right, Brandy Batone. Brandy Batone of Plano, Texas, again, was driving to pick up her kid from school. And so she pulls into the carpool lane, and the cop pulls her over, and he asked if there's anybody else in the car. And she said, yes. And the cop said, where? And she pointed to her belly. And she said, my baby girl is right here. She is a person. The officer was unconvinced. And he said, no, it has to be two people outside the body. And then she, very smart woman, argued that the Supreme Court's recent decision in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization, which overturned Roe v. Wade, meant that her unborn child was a separate living person and therefore qualified as a second person in the car to allow her to use the high occupancy vehicle lane. Another officer told her if she fought the ticket, it would most likely get dropped, but he still wrote her the $215 citation. And so she went on TV. This made news, and she told the Dallas Morning News, she said, how could this be fair? According to the new law, this is a life. I know this may fall on deaf ears, but as a woman, this was shocking. And so she went on CNN. She was interviewed on yesterday, and she explained that she wasn't necessarily trying to make a political stance, but that she would love to be part of a pro-woman movement, and it just didn't make sense to the way the two laws were not speaking, weren't jiving. So, and here's the deal, because there's a dilemma here. The Texas Penal Code recognizes an unborn child as a person, but the Texas Transportation Code does not. So there's a state representative, a guy named Brian Harrison, who happens to be a Republican, who represents a suburban district south of Dallas. And on Saturday night, he tweeted a link to an article about this traffic ticket, and he promised to introduce a bill to clarify the state statutes. And he said, unborn babies are persons, meaning they're also passengers, and should be treated accordingly under Texas laws. Okay, so here's my thought. An unborn baby is a fetus, and no, is not a person. And so she should probably get the ticket for using the carpool lane, but also the Texas law citing fetuses as people needs to be struck down because they are not. I'll say it again. If the fetus cannot live outside of the mother's womb, outside of the host body, then it is not a separate person. If it depends on the mother's biology to keep it alive, feed through the umbilical cord and such, then it is not a separate person. But good on this woman for being creative and thinking on her feet. Like that. My kind of woman. All right. Now it's time to let a man speak. And this one knows what history is. He's not a fan of the rewritten history books that are coming out of the state of Texas. Go figure. Anyway, where is he? Harvey? Where are you, Harvey? Where are you, Harvey? And my thing's not playing. Man, I hate it when I do this big buildup. Let me see if I can get my thing to... Why won't it play? My Harvey K intro won't play. It's Jackie Gleason going, well, where is he? Where is he, Harvey? And see, when it would play, it would give me a moment to set up our shot. I don't know why it's not playing. It looks like everything's empty there. And I can either set up the shot or look for the Harvey thing. And so here's what I'll do. I'll get the shot set up. I'll bring him in. Hi, Harvey JK.
Good afternoon, Nicole. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And now while we're talking, I'll find the Where's Harvey because, you know, better late than never.
Where's Harvey?
Yeah. Where is he? Okay, hold on one second. Because now it's going to piss me off. I have to be able to play it. GH, Harvey JK intro. Here we are. So Let's try it like this.
Well, where is he?
Where is who?
Where is Harvey?
Oh, you mean Harvey J.K.
Yeah,
Harvey.
Harvey.
Well, he's coming up right now on the Nicole Sandler Show.
All that for this, but, you know, I let little things.
It wouldn't have felt natural if you hadn't played that.
That's right. That's right. And sometimes the gremlins get into my computers and they, I have a file right there. It just didn't let me play. Anyway, hi, Harvey. So when I was promoting you, you know, I do a show card every day to promote the show. And today I used a line from a Sam Cooke song. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
Love Sam Cooke.
Who doesn't, right? He was a national hero. Although I hear he's doing very good things. Sorry. Anyway, I say don't know much about history because it's really sad what's happening to our students here in the U.S. because the dumbing down of America has not only begun, it's in full swing. And what they're doing to history is really shocking. Now, you're a historian. What do you think when you hear teachers being interviewed and say, well, you know, when the interviewer says, well, obviously slavery was bad. Oh, no, nothing's bad. Nothing's bad. A teacher's not allowed to.
How could it be bad? It's part of American history. American history is only good, you know?
But it's not only that, Harvey. Now there's also rules in some of these school districts that are teaching, I'm saying this in air quotes, both sides of the Holocaust. Both sides of the Holocaust?
Both sides of slavery, both sides of the Holocaust. Look, this has been going on for a long time. I know it must be back. It's got to have been back in the 90s. I was on a committee back in the early 90s, the Organization of American Historians, when, of all administrations, the first Bush administration, with Lynn Cheney as the Secretary of Education, they were creating national history standards. Amazingly, the standards themselves were being authored by some fairly progressive historians, which I'm sure didn't please Lynn Cheney, but she had launched this project. And a lot of us put a lot of work into it to try to, and when I say standards, they were flexible, but the idea was what kinds of things should students come to know? It's as simple as that. And ultimately, Lynn Cheney was really angry about the results. She wanted to trash them. But here's a sort of tragic postscript to that. When they were then presented to the Clinton administration, Congress passed something to, you know, saying this was awful, and Clinton went along with it. The Democrats deferred to the Cheney anger, and basically everything was off. Well, that opened the door for in the coming years. It goes back. I forgot how long I was doing this kind of stuff. The Texas, you know, Texas has a state school board.
Right.
And they set the standards in Texas. They buy the textbooks. And people should know that for a long time, if Texas bought a textbook, given the scale of the purchase, the textbook publishers often just supplied the same kinds of stuff around the country, which meant Texas notions of history were being produced around the country.
And they still are. They sell textbooks to much of the rest of the country. They come out of Texas and a few other places, but I think that's the biggest supplier.
Yeah. Well, to go back then to your question, it was astounding. In one sense, it was very curious, very curious. I believe it was Jefferson. They wanted to eliminate Jefferson. And I can't remember if it was because of his affair with Sally Hemings and the offspring that resulted.
Right.
Or if it had to do with the fact that he wrote, all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable. I'm forgetting because I would have booked up if I knew where we were going to.
Right.
But the other thing about it is that, and they also didn't like the, you know, arguments about separation of church and state. I mean, just go right through it. Now, come this many years forward, and I can also tell you that liberals in the left are not innocent in all of this. It strikes me.
They never are they?
No, they're not. But I do want to make it clear that there are certain kinds of fundamentals that whether you're on the right or the left, we cannot afford to not have kids know them. Even if they don't memorize them to remember them all their lives, they've got to know them. And surely the most significant is the Declaration, the Constitution, but most imperatively, the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
I mean, let them know the First Amendment and what it implies. Let them know freedom. Basically, I'll paraphrase this.
Okay.
It's freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of assembly with the right of petition. I say freedom of conscience. What I'm saying is freedom of religion. But it's also, as Jefferson himself later said, it's also a matter of, in part, of freedom from religion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that is a separation of church and state. Now, also, this is important. I'm really glad you pushed me into this. What is interesting is that the right wingers who literally are running our country right now, in spite of the fact that the Democrats have control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. I mean, you think about the Supreme Court right now, they are imposing Catholic and fundamentalist Christian notions of life and death upon us. Let's be clear, okay? But so here's the thing. They would say, well, you know, you can interpret this. Well, here's the deal. There would have been no successful revolution had it not been for Thomas Paine's pamphlet, Common Sense. And in Thomas Paine's pamphlet, Common Sense, at 3 or 5, depending how you count, he made it clear that the American Revolution, and this was, to his mind, one of the most revolutionary aspects of what would become the American Revolution, would involve separation of church and state. Unprecedented.
What a concept.
What a concept. And in fact, as he put it, the only business that government should have in terms of conscience and religion is that they should make sure people get to practice it as they please, okay, which allows for not practicing at all. The point is that now, why do I say this? Because in Virginia, here's the irony, in Virginia, Baptists, Methodists, and Presbyterians were very hesitant about going into a revolution because they were afraid that since their leaders in Virginia were Anglicans, Church of England folks, that maybe there would be no freedom of religion in a new America. But when they read Common Sense by Thomas Paine, they said, whoa, here's a concept. You mean to say if we go into this revolution, we can actually create a nation where freedom of religion, that is separation of church and state, prevails. By the way, many people did not realize that Jefferson himself was not a Christian. He was a deist.
Right. A lot of them were deists, weren't they?
Right. And in fact, they love to tell you about Washington, you know, and Adams and the others. But it's the case that even if Washington, you know, made appearances in church, he was very much a deist. He believed in God. Deists believed in God. They did not believe in the Trinity, nor do they necessarily believe in the historicity of the Bible.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyhow, and by the way, I want to make myself clear in case anyone misunderstands me. There was a guy who had been a liberal and became very much a conservative named Michael Novak.
Okay.
And to give you an idea, you probably know about that university created by that Orthodox Catholic, the guy who started the Domino Pizza chain. It's in Florida, that church, the university. It's called, it's up in sort of central Florida.
You're asking the wrong person. When it comes to religion.
Yeah, they built a university, this guy, and the idea was to make this a very serious Catholic university. They didn't want any liberal Catholic notions. This was going to be serious. Michael Novak, he was the visionary for this, you know, major enterprise. Well, oddly enough, Michael Novak and I were friends because he interviewed me on C-SPAN and he liked the fact, this is interesting, he liked the fact that I did not deny that Washington believed in God.
Okay.
He said, too many people on the left think that Washington as a deist didn't believe in God, but that I understood that deism did not deny the existence of God. So he and I became friends. And he's passed away since then. But it is the case that even the likes of Michael Novak, very conservative, intellectual, and religious believer, was very clear. He understood that the founders were in great part deists.
Yes.
So, and they believed in separation of church and state because they felt that that if the state got hold of religion, okay, that it would dictate the terms of religion. Similarly, if the church got hold of the government, it would persecute believers of other faiths disbelievers,
right.
You know?
Right.
So there you go.
So wasn't one of the reasons that they left England and came over here to the New World was for religious liberty? Was so that they could practice what they wanted or not if they didn't want to?
Yeah, but no, we should appreciate the fact, for example, in Massachusetts, they set up a very conservative regime so that in Massachusetts, even in the first few decades of independence, those who were not members of the Congregational Church had to pay a tax to the church.
Really?
Yes. Oh. And Roger Williams, who you probably have heard of, who was a Baptist in Massachusetts, was basically persecuted. He escaped to Rhode Island. He established Rhode Island as truly, if you like, the first church, the first colony, later state, that had recognized this idea of freedom of religion. Similarly, in Pennsylvania, although the Quakers were very powerful and not always the progressives that we've come to think of them as, it is the case that there was this kind of freedom of religion in Philadelphia. And by the way, when I say freedom of religion, they had Catholics, Jews, Moravians, every Protestant faith imaginable, and so on and so forth. And fortunately, that's where Paine landed when he came to America from England. And he landed in Philadelphia, and he was absolutely amazed and loved the fact that there was this diversity of faiths. In fact, one thing he wrote in Common Sense, he said, look, I mean, God wants a diversity of faiths, or he wouldn't have created America as a refuge for all these faiths. It was that kind of rhetoric he was using. It wasn't the usual Paine rhetoric, but he was trying to reach out across the religious divides. So
gotcha. So listening today, I mean, if you can bear to listen to the ramblings of a Marge Q. Green or Lauren Boebert or any of that cabal of crazy in Congress, you know, they talk about, well, there is no separation of church and state, and the founders were against that, and they make shit up.
There ought to be a law about making up
yes,
that kind of shit.
There should. I think. How about no member of Congress may lie on the floor of the House or the Senate?
Right. And it's striking to me that anyone with any sense of American history has not literally mobilized folks within the House to just stand up and drown such shit out.
Yeah.
You know,
it is astounding that these people are even given any credibility when they say something so stupid and so out of the realm. Pick up a history book and read it. I saw this interview with these three teachers, I think, on CNN. What I said at the beginning when you came in, one of them said about, you know, can we say that slavery is bad? And I'm like, no, nothing is bad. Like, how do you can't teach like that. So they're going to teach both sides of the Holocaust. There are not two sides of the Holocaust. This is right. And so this is where we are today. Now, Harvey, you've studied, you know, history and the rise of fascism around the world and the rise of Nazism in Germany. And it feels to me, and again, I wasn't alive then, but it feels like this is what's happening now.
Yeah. Yes, it does feel like that. And I don't think that most Americans actually understand how tenuous American democracy is right now. And I don't just mean the idea of elections, because hell, what they'll do is they'll create a quasi-fascist order and still have elections. Okay, they'll just ban certain kinds of politics in those elections. No, what's imperative is that people realize that if we're going to, if you like, redeem, rescue, save democracy, what we need is not simply you and I and vast numbers of relatively knowledgeable or knowledgeable people expressing truths. We also need a Democratic Party a Democratic Party with that is not simply determined to later tell us we're going to resist, but actually right now make changes happen.
Right.
Right now. To be honest, I think it's too late for them to do anything. I think November's becoming clear.
Right.
But here's the point. Even if November is becoming clear, Biden is still in the White House after November.
For two more years.
We may still hold on to the Senate. They have to start the fight that whatever happens in November, they need to continue to pursue in power or not in the House and the Senate, with the idea that Americans see that when the Republicans start really not just speaking shit, but legislating shit, that the Democrats have come to their senses and are going to go back to the progressive kinds of battles that FDR and others were willing to pursue for many a decade.
And here's the thing, Harvey. So we can go back to the beginning of this administration. And you know, I tried to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Can I just wait? Pause 1 second.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to, I was asking myself before I came on, should I say to Nicole, I told you.
You don't have to, because I'm going there.
Okay.
So, you know, Biden puts a picture of FDR up in the Oval Office right across from his desk. This is going to be a new, you know, his inspiration. And Bernie's got his ear, and he's seemingly behind all the right things, to the point where on, I guess it was Friday, that this president's communications director, Kate Benningfield, who, by the way, announced she's leaving at the end of summer, is talking about the reaction to the Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. Now, here's the thing. They had advanced knowledge. They knew, because we all knew because of the leak, that this was coming. So they should have been preparing something so there was a response to hit the minute the decision comes down. And yet nothing happened. And so there are some people who spoke up and was like, what the fuck? Do something. And so Benningfield said in a statement on Saturday, quote, Joe Biden's goal in responding to Dobbs, that's the case, is not to satisfy some activists who have been consistently out of step with the mainstream of the Democratic Party. Excuse me? What? Yes, what?
Right. Trash the progressives at every turn. That's
holy
right.
Shit.
When in fact, when if it wasn't for the fact that the progressives pushed him, Biden, that is, to seem a little more progressive than he has ever been. Right.
Yep.
He would never have won if he came across like, hey, we're going to cut Social Security. We're going to cut Medicare. If he spoke in 2020, the way he spoke for 40 years, basically, he would never have been elected. Bernie and the progressives saved the nation.
Bernie and the progressives, who after Jim Clyburn sabotaged Bernie, so there was no way he was getting through. Jim Clyburn rallied all the other candidates in the primary, and it's like, okay, you need to drop out now so that we get Joe Biden in and we're not stuck with Bernie Sanders. That was a coordinated effort on behalf of these centrist so-called Democrats, and they dare to say that these activists who have been consistently out of step with the mainstream of the Democratic Party, you know what? I'm sorry, but I have a little song for Miss Benningfield. Fuck you very, very much. I mean, seriously, this is what they do? Well, they suck up to the Republicans. They diss the progressives.
I have to tell you, this is interesting to know. I was just reading. I'm reading into the question of the Constitution lately because there's a new book out, The Anti-Oligarchy Constitution, by Fishkin and Forbath, and it's a hefty book, and I hate hefty books, but it is the case that it's a fascinating volume, and I jumped into the FDR chapter. The introduction was good enough. They told you, if you want to know this, go to this chapter. You want to know this, go to that chapter. And they reminded me, the things you can forget, I was reminded, and this is going to seem a little remote, but stick with me for a moment. So FDR knew that to save the country economically, that he had to take the United States off the gold standard. Right. But he knew the opposition was going to be powerful. And as soon as he proceeded to do that, the lawsuits began. And he was worried that the Supreme Court was going to, because they're so conservative, was going to declare his actions unconstitutional. So he prepared a speech in which he made it clear, number one, that the court is not the only arbiter of what's constitutional.
Right.
And he was going to defy the court. That, okay, it turned out they agreed 5-4. They agreed with him. So as a consequence, he put aside that speech. Later, in 1935, these things happened. First of all, the court found the National Industrial Recovery Act and the Agricultural Adjustment Act, but they found them unconstitutional, having already been in place for a couple of years. Now, FDR might not have been happy about it, but he had already come to see that it was time to do a second New Deal, not mess around with the original one because the capitalists mm-hmm. were all trying to circumvent what he had done. But what he did do that year is he signed into law, the Democrats voted it into law. He signed it. I mean, they voted on the bills. He signed it into law, Social Security and the National Labor Relations Act, the two most significant laws alongside of, say, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 38.
Right.
He signed them into law, fearing the possibility that they were going, the court in its conservative stupidities, was going to find those laws unconstitutional. So as soon as he won re-election in 36, he announced he was going to change the court. He was going to ask the Congress to change the court. They called it court packing. It wasn't exactly that. What he was going to do is he was going to expand the court. He said, any justice over the age of 70, we don't want to tire them out. We're going to, for every one of them over the age of 70, we'll add one justice. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, that all hell broke loose. Conservatives and even liberals were upset. It looked like FDR was going to create a dictatorship. The fact was that he had a lot of support, but he tended to back off. But what happened was he mobilized labor and other groups to support him, and he scared the hell out of one or more of the justices, and they voted on the court in favor of the constitutionality of these things. Well, he scared them, basically. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What the Democrats have been doing is deferring over and over again to the idea that the court is some elevated body that they have to bow down to.
And instead of saying the Republicans are the ones packing the court, the fact right. that they stole oh, sure. three seats.
They should be out there over and over again reminding Americans of the last dozen years and what the Republicans are threatening to do. Do
right.
we hear any of them doing
no.
that? No. They say, well, maybe we can get it. Some of these so-called progressives say, well, we'll have a middle-class tax cut. We don't need a middle-class tax
no.
cut.
No.
What we need is to give what is due to the American voter, what is due to the American worker, and what is due to American women. What is it? Their rights
right.
that have
right.
been that are being literally for the last 45 years taken away. And yep. we saw it. I mean, that Roe v. Wade decision. Okay.
Yep.
Look,
and the non-response
coming.
Right.
What they knew, and you're right. What did they do?
Nothing.
Zilch,
nothing.
As we used to say.
Now, Zilch. Okay. Now, Harvey, you're going to love this. Now I'm going to make your head explode. So I'm on a mailing list with a lot of progressives and a lot of names you would recognize. I mean, these are people who are, you know, some of them are heavy hitters.
Yeah.
And the latest thread on this list has been, we should get Jon Stewart to run for president. We need our own Zelensky. And then they're talking about other people who would work like Jon Stewart, like Matthew McConaughey or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I'm like, I'm reading this. I'm like, are you got people serious? Are you really talking yeah. about electing yeah. a celebrity oh, yeah. for president? Right. As my mother used to say, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. And this is what they're talking about.
Jon Stewart isn't even a progressive.
No, he's not.
He's a union buster by most accounts.
That's not good.
Yes. I double checked in this. I've asked around. Okay. I'll start. Okay. Also, people had this idea when they were watching the Daily Show that he was some kind of progressive. He was no progressive.
No.
Every single thing he did that he leaned into progressively, he counteracted with his utterly ridiculous
right.
and half-assed jokes conservatively. Utterly. I'm going to use the F word.
Go.
is a fucking lousy comedian.
Well, I tend to disagree with that. I actually like Jon Stewart, but no, it doesn't I'll mean he should be president.
Look, when I don't even want to go into it. The guy.
I told you your head was going to explode.
I'm telling you. Yes, my head exploded. I know. Absolutely. Okay.
These are people
give him credit
who
for
are.
One thing. Yeah. One thing. Yeah. When he supported the need to support the first
responders.
That was the high point. Yep. That's, by the way, the only thing right now that I feel I can grant it because, and then after, then he did that.
The thing
God awful
that rally with Colbert.
DC,
horrible. Colbert. Horrible. I mean,
two phonies, two grifters telling you.
But tell us what you really think, Harvey. So I thought you'd enjoy it. I feel, you know, I talk about opposite world all the time.
Ask
These are
friend.
People
ask,
who
ask
know better.
Howie. Ask Howie Klein. You're still talking.
Oh,
still
well, Howie's on the show every Thursday.
And ask him what he thinks of
I certainly.
Stewart.
Well, Howie's on that list, too. So I'll be definitely curious to get
that
his
was
response.
Like people telling us we should have had what's her name, you know, wealthy, super media, African-American.
Oprah?
Oprah, like we should elect her president.
Right. Yeah. These are the same people. It's like, so because they put some famous person in office that has basically destroyed what was left of this country. That's how we count. Well, we need somebody who cuts through the north. It's like, I can't believe this group of people who I generally respect is having this conversation. I just can't. Like, can't.
Yeah, I that's.
Yeah, this is where
By the
we
way,
are.
I think I'm never going to call myself a progressive again.
Why? What are you?
Because of what you just told me.
Well, you know,
I
look,
don't
they
be
don't
mistaken
own
for
the mantle.
I don't want to be mistaken for those idiots.
I hear you. I hear you. I look, at
I'm
least
I'm going to call myself from now on. I'm going to be a painite in Thomas Paine's spirit, and because I should be a pain in the ass.
Well, that you are. Harvey J.K., pain in the ass, and professor emeritus of democracy and justice at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So where do we go from here? I mean, look, I don't think, to be honest, I don't think Joe Biden should run again. But now we're seeing, the top Democrats are all saying they won't run because Biden says he's going to. So they want to put the final nail in the coffin of any chance for a future for if you're not a white Christian evangelical in the current perversion of the word in America. I just don't get it. This is when we should be digging deep to get the best we have to offer, not, you know, arm candy or something for the party, not a popularity contest.
I know we're approaching late in the game, so I just want to ask you while I'm here with you.
Okay.
Did I tell you my daughter got married last
you
week?
You did, and you showed the video.
I want to find
the video. I'm going to see if I can pull it up here. Because what's your daughter's name?
I did. Fiona.
So you and Fiona did an adorable walk down the aisle, because yes, you did send me the video.
Yeah, don't hesitate to use that up. But I do want you to know that when she was young and all the way through high school, she had a very hard time waking up in the morning. Schools should never start that early in the morning as far as she was concerned. So the deal was my wife would leave for work. Our older daughter would go to school ahead of Fiona. And my job was to get Fiona up, get her breakfast, but to really help her wake up, because I knew she loved music and dancing. So every day we would just dance for a while, basically, to South African music.
Oh, how fun.
To everything. And then Rick Astley, I know it's Rick Rowling quite often now, but they'll hear this thing as you get to show.
Yeah, I got it. So, okay. So it was this past weekend, Harvey's daughter.
Two Saturdays ago.
Okay. Yeah. So this is.
In Brooklyn, New York.
Where was the wedding? Where is this?
In Brooklyn, Greenpoint in Brooklyn.
Greenpoint. Okay. So your dad out there. Okay. All right. So here, let me just play it for you. So this was.
And everyone should know this is an assistant attorney general of the state of New York.
Is she? Wow. Yeah. Okay. Let's check out the walk down the aisle. It's not the traditional walk your daughter down the aisle music here. Oh, there they go dancing.
Sound, but it's Rick Astley, folks.
Oh,
so sweet.
Aww. The best walking down the aisle I've seen in a long time. Oops, hold on, I'm pulling the wrong thing down. Yes?
That was her idea, and I immediately agreed.
Aw, so sweet. That was very, very sweet. All right. Well, that at least we can go out with a smile.
That's what I figured. I reminded you, my head had exploded. Maybe it can come back together a bit.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know where we go from here. We're in trouble. We are
Next
in so
time
much
I come
trouble.
On, we'll talk about the project of the future, maybe.
Is this something that is being?
No, I mean, we've already talked about the Economic Bill of Rights stuff I've been pursuing. Yeah, I will tell everyone, and next time I come on, we can hopefully talk even more about it again. The response I've been getting is remarkable. In fact, I'll give you the quick rendition. So here in Wisconsin, it definitely Democrats are interested. In Massachusetts, the state Democratic Party convention in Massachusetts, this was about a month ago, voted 97% in favor of adopting the Economic Bill of Rights. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the best one. Keep West Virginia, Manchin state.
Yeah.
There's been something of a coup d'etat in the Democratic Party there.
Really?
I won't go into details about it. I can talk about it next time because it's a little. But the progressives in that state party will be presenting sometime soon the Economic Bill of Rights, 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights for that state. I mean, there's a real divide there between Manchin and the party that's incoming. So,
well, that's good to know.
Very good. Because, you know, you say Massachusetts, everyone, well, that's Massachusetts.
Right.
A bunch of, but when you say West Virginia historically was an FDR kind of state. But the Democrats, as they have done everywhere, just blew it because they abandoned the FDR tradition.
Yep. Yep. We see it over and over again. There's no long game there. It's just it's just so disappointing.
They all want to protect their asses and please their donors.
Oh, God. All right. Harvey J.K., thank you as always. We'll get you back in a few weeks. And
good
and
to see you. I'll be there anytime, you know.
Thanks so much. Okay. All right. You have a good one, Harvey. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. And with that, we're done. Oh, there, Harvey was out of here fast. So I'll tell you what. We're going to go. I will leave you with the news. Tomorrow, hearing 10 a.m. Eastern, tomorrow afternoon on the show, we'll go through it. Either Laffy will be here or not. I'm not sure at this point. She's in Canada, you know, don't you know? But either she'll be with me for the review of the testimony or we'll just do it ourselves. But regardless, I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. We'll get through this, maybe. All right, here's the news. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Congress is back in session, and Senate reconciliation talks are heating up. But Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer will be working remotely after testing positive for COVID. It's a busy week ahead at the White House. Monday morning, President Biden hosts an event celebrating the recently passed gun legislation. And in the late afternoon, he'll preview the first images from the Webb Space Telescope. Tuesday, the January 6th committee holds its next public hearing beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern. More on that in a moment. On Wednesday, the president departs on a four-day trip to Israel, the West Bank, and Saudi Arabia. A little bit of contention over that one. On Thursday, it's still tentative, but the January 6th committee will reportedly hold a prime time hearing. It may be the final one in this series.
No, it was canceled.
But
ignore me.
We don't know that for sure yet.
Oh, nope.
According to a new poll from the New York Times Siena College, President Biden is facing an alarming level of doubt from inside his own party, with 64% of Democratic voters saying they'd prefer a new candidate in the 2024 presidential campaign. At last check, Biden's job approval rating sat at 33%. Now, the president's taking a lot of heat on many issues, but again, his own party is not happy with the White House response to the Supreme Court overturning Roe. So on Sunday, he took a kind of tiny step, saying he might declare a public health emergency to allow federal resources to be used to increase abortion access in the wake of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. The White House has said it doesn't see this as a great option.
But Biden said it was important for abortion rights forces to do whatever they can to counter the decision as the red states keep imposing new abortion laws or tightening restrictions. So near his family's beach home in Delaware, the president answered some questions on Sunday.
Mr. President, for women who were protesting outside the White House yesterday.
Yes, keep protesting because keep making your point. It's critically important. We can do a lot of things to accommodate the rights of women in the meantime. But fundamentally, the only thing that's going to change this is if we have a national law that reinstates Roe v. Wade. That's the bottom line. Everything else, we can get pieces of it. And I'm trying to do that.
The president said he lacked the power to reinstate Roe, but the administration is doing, quote, a lot of things to accommodate the rights of women. However, White House Communications Director Kate Bedingfield further fanned the flames of discord within the party when she issued a statement on Saturday. She said, quote, Joe Biden's goal in responding to Dobbs is not to satisfy some activists who have been consistently out of step with the mainstream of the Democratic Party. What? She continued, it's to deliver help to women who are in danger and assemble a broad-based coalition to defend a woman's right to choose now, just as he assembled such a coalition to win during the 2020 campaign. Now back to that reconciliation package. Reportedly, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and quasi-president Joe Manchin have been negotiating a scaled-down $1 trillion reconciliation package, you know, like Build Back Better. But there are still hurdles. Schumer and the White House want to put a bill on the floor before the Senate leaves for the August recess. And they note that the USICA, that's the big China competitiveness bill, is being used as a negotiating pawn. Anyway, Schumer has already submitted a Medicare prescription drug pricing proposal to the Senate parliamentarian for review that CBO estimates would save the federal government nearly $288 billion over a decade. Senate Democrats also have a deal to raise taxes on pass-through income for small business owners who make more than $400,000 a year. The revenue generated by this tax would go to boost Medicare. But there's still no agreement on a global minimum tax, on the state and local tax deduction fight, which many progressives see as a giveaway to the wealthiest individuals, and most importantly, perhaps, what to do about those enhanced premium subsidies for Obamacare enrollees. This additional support runs out at the end of the year, and millions of us could see massive increases in our premiums if nothing is done. Manchin, of course, has concerns about this provision, but it is a big priority for Democratic leaders on the Hill, Democratic governors, and reportedly the White House. As for Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, she hasn't shown her hand on this yet. So far, she's letting Manchin take the lead, but reports say there's no deal without Sinema's vote. And she's been skeptical of tax increases. Oy. And finally, there are environmental and climate change provisions. There's been a lot of focus on electric vehicle tax credits, something Manchin has complained about. He's worried about the impact of high energy costs and also wants to ramp up fossil fuel production in the short run while the U.S. eventually transitions to cleaner sources. What could possibly go wrong? And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.